This is the Leadership Momentum Podcast with Chris Brown.
Well, hello, church leaders all over the country and all over the world. I want to welcome you to the Leadership Momentum Podcast. We've got a few more weeks until Christmas. Are you ready? Here we are in December. I don't know how many of you are ready for Christmas. I know, you know, personally or within the church, but got a few more weeks left. Today, we're going to be talking about Bible Belt ministry versus non-Bible Belt ministry. Whenever I go to conferences, I hear, not necessarily from the stage, but I hear in the hallways and kind of in the corners of the lobby, and there's this conversation. And you know, one stat that I always hear, I don't know if you guys have heard this before, but everyone and their mom says, I minister in a 98% unchurched area. I've heard that research all the time, and I don't know where people are finding this. Maybe you've said that before. Where are we getting that number from? We're going to talk about the differences between Bible Belt and non-Bible Belt. I've got some non-Bible Belt friends who say that ministry is much easier in the Bible Belt. And then I've got friends in the Bible Belt that say it's easier in non-Bible Belt. So we're going to talk about the tensions in each one of those worlds and try to understand what all of us are experiencing. I'm honored to have Pastor Pete Wilson with us on the show. He's the founding and senior pastor of Cross Point Church. They planted 12 years ago, and now over 7,000 people on the weekends. You got seven locations, thriving, healthy locations, and consistently one of the fastest growing churches in America. Glad to have him here. Also, he's a best-selling author. His latest book, What Keeps You Up at Night, is a tremendous resource. Great book. There's a great thought in there. I love it. It says, we don't have a fear problem, but a faith problem. Really cool. So I've got a link to that right there at stewardshipcentral.org. So check that out. And folks, as I was talking with Pete Wilson in this episode, we were diving into this and we decided, well, shoot, we need to have the other side of the coin in the conversation. So we fired up the phones and got Judd Wilhite, senior pastor of Central Christian in Las Vegas, him on the phone. And he's leading over 20,000 people and campuses all over the world. And you know what's cool about these two folks? They're friends, really cool. And they both have campuses in both types of areas. So they've got campuses in Bible Belt areas, and they've got campuses in non-Bible Belt areas. So that's pretty cool. Judd is also a best-selling author. The God of Yes, great resource there, and Pursued. The links for those two books will be at stewardshipcentral.org as well. So all the resources are highly recommended, and they're there at my website. If you have any questions about today's conversation, of course, you can email in at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com. Again, I want to welcome you to the Leadership Momentum Podcast. And without further ado, I would like you to enjoy, sit back, relax, enjoy this conversation about Bible Belt versus non-Bible Belt with Senior Pastor Pete Wilson and Senior Pastor Judd Wilhite. Enjoy. All right, folks. Well, I'm here in studio with the one and only Pete Wilson, and he is my pastor, so this is a huge honor. And Pastor Pete, how's it going?
It's going great, Chris. Thanks so much for letting me be a part of this.
This has been a tremendous podcast and been just a huge encouragement to a lot of leaders. And when I thought about the encouragement element and their experience and folks, you might not know this, but my wife gets to work alongside Pete in leadership. And so she comes home all the time bragging about him. And I'm like, I've got to get that leadership style and this man that I look up to so much when it comes to communication and when it comes to leadership into the studio. And I want to relay some of his heart behind the way he leads. And so we're here, we're in Christmas season, which is a little unique. And I wanted to ask you, how are you at Cross Point? How are you leveraging Christmas? And everyone's got their different philosophies out there on how much you leverage it and why. And so I just want to dig into that real fast.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I'm a huge Christmas like fanatic. Like,
okay.
Over the top. Always have been. So I just love this time of year. I think it's a blast. But I think from a church perspective, I would say for years we did not probably leverage it in the way that we should have. We did Christmas Eve services, and for one reason or another, they were never a huge outreach for us. I know churches, it's their biggest attendance of the year,
yeah,
is Christmas Eve. for whatever reason, it wasn't that way, whether it's a cultural thing, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah.
But we never seemed to, I mean, it was a great service. People loved it, enjoyed it. We did the candlelight thing.
Yeah.
But I never felt like we were really reaching out to the community in the way that we should. So a couple years ago, on top of our Christmas Eve services, we started something called a Merry Music City Christmas. And this was all, the whole idea behind it was, what if we create something that's literally just a gift back to the city of Nashville? This would be something, no strings attached, just create a really incredible event that anybody would want to bring their family to, regardless of their beliefs. And we wouldn't charge a penny for it. We wouldn't take up an offering. It would just be a gift to them, a gift back to the city for allowing us to do ministry, because, you know, Nashville has been so good to us. And so we started brainstorming that, and it just kind of took off for us. And so we've done it the past 2 years. It is a ton of work. We put on a really great program that has just first-class music, and we invite artists. Nashville's full of them. So we invite artists that kind of come in and perform, different artists every night. And we turn our parking lot into one big massive, like, winter wonderland. I'm talking sled. You've been to it. So, I mean, there's sledding. The first year we had ice skating. It wasn't real ice, but it kind of looked like real ice. All kinds of things for the kids. And it's just, I love it. It's my favorite week of the year at Cross Point.
There's a few things that he just hit, but kind of skim by. And this can happen. You know, you get into it and you get a little tunnel vision and you don't realize what you have. And he was very thankful that Nashville's been good to him. But one thing that I wanted you to hit on that maybe you didn't quite didn't realize when you were talking just a second ago. Nashville's been really good to you. And this is something I want to break down for all the leaders listening. Why? Why are they good to you? Because there's got to be a reason why. Which one comes first? Are they good to you first? Or is it because you're adding value back to the city? And I know you're a very humble man, but this is really good for our leaders to hear. Like, why is the city? Because there's a lot of scenarios where they're not very happy you're in town.
Absolutely.
They don't want you in their schools. They don't want you in their theaters. They don't want you around. Why does Nashville so happy about Cross Point being there?
I think because from day one, our outlook has been that we exist to serve the city. That we're here. I've always thought, if something horrible happened at Cross Point and the church just disappeared and went away, I would want our city to mourn that. Like, oh my gosh, even people who didn't necessarily go to it would say, man, they had such an impact on this community. They did so much good. They were changing people's life. They were improving. They were making the city a better place to live.
Yeah.
I would want them to miss that. And so I think that just kind of became part of our DNA from the beginning.
Uh-huh. You know, you said earlier too, you went by it real fast, that most churches grow during Christmas time. If they don't, why do you think?
Well, because for the same reason that it was not a growth engine for us for a long time, we just looked at it from how can we serve our people. And we created a great Christmas Eve service that created wonderful memories for our attenders. Now, we still do that service. They still look forward to it. I look forward to it. I love it. But it was not serving the city. It was not reaching people. And so kind of our whole vision behind it was, what we want to do is create an event where we can do two things. We want to share the hope of Christmas with people who may not really know the real reason for it. And we want to give them a taste of Cross Point. Those two things. Show them the hope of Christmas and just a taste of who we are as a church.
Church leaders, you're out there, whether you're a lead pastor or you're a ministry leader. I know we're the first week of December here, and it's a little late for you to put together a big, huge deal like he's referring to. But this attitude of serving the city, it's not too late. Maybe you could adapt whatever plans you have now to add an element of community service. You want to create a win-win scenario in your city where you win and they win. And because we're all in this together. So it might not be too late. Let me switch gears just for a minute and ask you about New Year's, because we're not quite as late on that one.
Right.
So we got
right.
About 3 or 4 weeks to put together a game plan on how we can leverage the new year. So everyone goes on vacation. They come back. What does Pete Wilson and Cross Point have planned?
Well, I think it's really challenging. And here's the challenge in the church world. and you know this, you've been a part of it for a long time. You're making all these plans for Christmas. Everything's crazy. For us, we give our staff the week after Christmas off every year. So they have that week off. Then we're coming back into January, which for us is the beginning of our growth season. January to Easter is the season that we statistically grow the most every single year. So we know we're going to have more guests that second weekend of January than any other time. So we have to start thinking way back, you know, really in November, start planning that series, our assimilation process for how we're going to capture the people who show up in January, because they show up for us in droves. And so it's really not so much about what do I need to do to attract them in January.
Yep.
It's kind of built in. They're showing up.
Okay.
My thought process as a leader goes more to how am I going to assimilate them once they show up? Because people show up in January and it's new. It's fresh. They want a new beginning. And it's great that they show up to church, but we got to find a way to assimilate.
So starting the new year, are there certain series topics that you go to? I know everyone listening is not necessarily a series-driven church. There's different models out there, but I know that at Crosspoint you are. There's pros and cons to both. But is there certain topics you want to hit on right there because the iron's hot?
Yeah, I think new beginnings. I think people tend to be pretty goal-oriented that time of year. I think it's a great time to hit on finances. You're starting a new year.
Yeah.
Why don't we start a budget this year, right? So finances is a big one. Anything that's goal oriented, I'm looking at. We've done it actually twice in January now. It's been years since we've done it, but it was called No Regrets, and that was a huge series for us. Like, I still talk to people to this day. That's when they started. So I think you do want to capitalize on the energy that comes with the beginning of the year, and whether that's resolutions. What do you want to start? What do you want to quit?
Yeah,
that's a great time to do that.
The starting and quitting thing, that's what you do with the congregation. Do you do anything with the leadership team, or do anything with the staff as far as, hey, look, back the previous year, this is maybe some of our regrets,
yeah,
and here's what we're looking for. What does that look like during that turn of the year?
It's the perfect time, I think, with your leadership team to go back and to look at what do we want to start this year and what do we want to quit this year? And I think that what do you quit is just as important as the what do we want to start,
yeah,
especially in the church world. I don't know why we do that, but we love to start stuff and we hate to quit them. And so you just accumulate all this stuff.
I've heard John Maxwell say, if it's a dead horse, dismount.
Yeah, that's right. That's so good. I love that. So that we'll do the same thing with our leadership as well, because that's just where their headspace is.
So folks listening would think, okay, these are all great tips, but possibly they could say, oh, that's the way it is in the Bible Belt. Mm. Have you ever heard that before?
Is
Nashville even in the Bible Belt?
Well, geographically, yes.
Okay.
It falls in what they would technically consider to be the Bible Belt. I think what's interesting, there's a lot of cities like Nashville that now fall into the Bible Belt, but the reality is they have so many thousands of people moving into them.
Yeah.
From everywhere.
Yeah.
That you can't, it's more of a melting pot.
The secrets got out. Nashville's amazing, right?
I think it is, yes. But I do think that probably there are some cultural differences from doing ministry in Nashville and doing ministry in, say, Seattle.
Yeah. Now, I'm a transplant. Am I soiling the Christian culture here?
You are. Yes. Bringing it down.
Folks, I'm a bad influence on Nashville. Oh, crazy stuff. So the reason why I asked that is because I feel like Nashville as a whole, Tennessee as a whole, obviously is in the Bible Belt. But when I go to the downtown campus of Crosspoint, it does not feel Bible Belt at all.
No.
And I'm coming from serving in the Miami area, which was very non-Bible Belt. So I thought I would, I'm going to pull an audible here for a minute.
Okay.
You've got a buddy named Judd Wilhite, and him and I are kind of virtual buddies. I haven't met him personally, but over social media. And I figured, I want to settle this debate, whether it's harder to be in the Bible Belt or non-Bible. He's from Vegas.
Not in the Bible Belt.
Right, exactly. Not even close. So we're going Nash Vegas versus Las Vegas. Amanda, if you can get Judd on the line, we're going to go ahead and call him, and we're going to settle this. We're going to ask some of these Christmas questions, ask some New Year's questions, some leadership questions, biggest obstacles. I've got some questions that have been bugging me for the longest time, and I'm going to have both of them right here on the line for you guys to settle this whole Bible Belt versus non-Bible Belt deal.
I love it.
Here's my little bit of a thesis going into this. We've got different devils, and I want them to dig into that. Now, I might be wrong, because I'm not a lead pastor. So they might say, Chris, you're an idiot. Actually, it's much different, and it's way easier in the Bible Belt. I don't know. We'll see how it goes. So let's see if we can get Judd on the line. We got him? Pastor!
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing very well. This is Chris Brown, and I've got your buddy, Pete Wilson, here. And
Hey, Judd.
He says that ministry, I'm going to put some words in his mouth. He said that ministry in Nashville is way harder than you have it.
Oh, come on.
You know I did not say that, Judd.
I've got it right here. He actually wrote that line down. So
yeah, that's right.
I just said it for him. Hey, listen, we're talking about Christmas. We're talking about New Year's. We're talking about some of the, just the dynamics of Bible Belt versus non-Bible Belt. Part of that conversation, we were saying that Pete really isn't in the Bible Belt. He's got some campuses in the burbs, but he's got one downtown that is very not Bible Belt. And I know you've got some challenges out there in Las Vegas, and just to remind everybody who Judd Wilhite is, he is the senior pastor of Central Christian Church. They're like got 75 million people going to their church. Actually, it's over 20,000. I can't keep up, but best-selling author, and all of his resources and Pete's resources will be on stewardshipcentral.org. So make sure you check that out. But he's got a totally different animal. He is facing another whole set of challenges that Pete is. And so I wanted to get you on here and ask you some true or not true questions. Are you game?
Yeah, absolutely. Fire away.
Pete says that he's got it much tougher here in the Bible Belt than you do out there in Las Vegas.
Wow. Here's the thing. I think that the thing about the Bible Belt or the South, I mean, at least there is a context for words like church or God or the Bible or things related to faith. Now, there might be a whole lot of baggage that comes with that Pete has to deal with sort of unwiring, or the guys in the Bible will have to deal with kind of unwiring. I think the challenge when you're outside of that world, like in Vegas, is there's just no context for any of that. It's all just like, it's kind of like a blank space in people's mind when you say the word. They don't have any real experience with it personally.
Yeah, Pete, what is some of that baggage he's referring to?
Well, Judd's exactly right. I mean, the thing that we deal with is so many people are coming in with some kind of context. Usually it's not positive.
Yeah.
So there's a process of almost deconstruction that has to happen in what they really think about church, what they think about God. So where Judd's probably starting most often kind of just in a blank space, I'm going to have to do a little bit of deconstruction, try to address a lot of the misconceptions they have about God, then start teaching them about who God really is.
Folks, we are talking with Pete Wilson, who's the senior pastor at Cross Point Church in Nashville, Tennessee, and we're talking with Pastor Judd Wilhite, who is the senior pastor at Central Church out in Las Vegas. So let's talk about, maybe you're not a lead pastor and you're listening in, what does being a ministry leader look like? So you've got two different types of people. You've got one that has no context, has no baggage, and you're trying to recruit them or to, I don't like that word, I like inviting them to an opportunity, not recruiting them, but you're trying to get them pumped up and inspired about volunteering. How does that look with you, Judd, versus with Pete?
Well, I think, for us, one of the things that we see is when people don't have a framework for church or a background with church, they don't show up to church. They don't go to church. They don't even think about church unless they're hurting or they're going through something. And so, we want to meet them at that point of need and help them. And what we find, like with our volunteers, and one of the challenges of being in that kind of a ministry environment, people come with a lot of hurt and pain, and they come needing, and sometimes just needing God, but sometimes needing help, recovery help, financial help. You just go down the list. Their whole family's in disarray, and so when they receive that help, what we find is on the positive side, there's a lot of gratitude, and I feel like they jump in. They're ready to serve at that point. It's a smaller group of people, but they're really ready to serve and give back because of all that they have experienced in their life. So they're not so critical on the back end. It's just really messy getting them to that place. Mm.
Pete, is there some times where you wish that you had kind of had some more of that? Does that sound refreshing to you?
I love working, with broken people because they seem to be so open. I mean, they're just like, whatever, you tell me what to do and I'll do it. They're desperate. And we obviously have a lot of broken, desperate people here in the South as well. So I think probably more often than not, we have a whole lot in common when it comes, you know, human beings tend to struggle across the board, regardless of where they live. And so many of the issues are the same issues. We just have to find different ways to approach it.
Yeah.
And that's what Judd does so well in Vegas. They understand their context. They know who they're speaking to. And I would say to any leader, any ministry leader, anywhere in the country, understand your context, understand your community. Where are the unique things that they're struggling with? And you figure that out, and you're going to have a hard time keeping people away.
So, folks, I am weighing out Bible Belt versus non-Bible Belt, two different churches. Here's another dynamic. Each one of these churches together have over 20 campuses. Some of them are in the Bible Belt, and some of them aren't, for each one of the churches. So they're trying to contextualize for each campus, with one having one type of volunteer, one having a different type of volunteer, one having they're viewing the programming from one perception, and seeing in another campus is seeing the programming from a different perception. So here's my question for both of you. Pete, you can go first. How do you manage that contextualization? How much is too much variety? And, you know, this whole idea of centralized versus decentralized, and then being able to make decisions at their campus. And how do you manage all that? Because you've got some downtown right in the mess, and you've got some suburbia where I've been to both of them. Yep. Totally different dynamic. How do you battle that?
I was really hoping you were going to ask Judd that first, and then I was just going to say,
I'm actually listening in.
I was going to say, that's
taking notes.
I totally agree with Judd. I'll say this. I went into multi-site a little naive about that, because I just didn't weigh that through. I didn't really think about the impact of how different our campuses would be.
Yeah.
And you know what? It's not so much even the big things of music and teaching.
Yeah.
Because again, people are people, but the way that you lead and the size of those campuses, they just have complexity. So you have one campus pastor in a room that has 300 people, and you have another campus pastor who has 4,000 people, they're facing two very different leadership challenges. And the things that those churches are going through in the life cycle of these churches, you know, one campus is 10 years old and the other one's one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's two very different places, two very different contexts. And I underestimated that. And I think it's cost us at times that I wasn't sensitive enough to that fact. To really kind of address that. So we've had to kind of go back a little bit and say, okay, things are a little different. And I would say we're pretty centralized, but we've had to start to be a little more sensitive to what's going on at the other campuses. What are the things they're struggling with? How can we support them in a way that they feel like we really know what they're going through? Which so much of that is just slowing down and listening to them.
You were talking about centralized versus decentralized, meaning how you lead the campuses. What I really want you to pick up on is not necessarily which one they're doing, because there's pros to both. What I want you to hear is their thought process and how they weigh the wrestles that they have. I want you to feel that it's normal and that you never really do arrive when it comes to this tension. I think Andy Stanley talks about the tensions that need to be managed. And this is a tension. You're never going to have it perfectly right. And I think, as Judd shares in just a moment, I think I want you to hear the wrestle behind the answer, not necessarily whether he's centralized or not. So, Judd, let us know a little bit of what Central is experiencing.
Well, we agree with what Pete has just said, and we're in process as well. You know, and I would say, like, it's ebb and flow. I don't think it's ever an answer that is sort of in concrete. I think for us, the guiding question is what works? And what works in one season is not always the thing that should work in another season. And what I mean by that is when we started multi-site, we were very centralized and very uniform across our campuses to the point that it was choking out our ability to accomplish our mission at a few of those campuses. We weren't acknowledging all of the differences that were real. And so once we pulled back and we started, made it a little less centralized and everybody had a lot more freedom. And then kind of, you know, everybody started running wild. And now we're in the process of pulling back again. And I think we're just understanding if we keep evaluating with this question of what is working and we just understand there's going to be some ebb and flow, we're sort of prepared to be in this constant movement of more centralized and then maybe less centralized and then pulling it back a little bit to make sure that we have our kind of uniform elements that we feel like are priority one represented at each campus. And then if it starts stifling it, giving people freedom to run a little bit and own it.
Okay. Judd, let's go back to Christmas for a second. We talked about Christmas with Pete earlier, and we asked what he's doing for Christmas and the reason why behind it. I'd love to hear, you didn't even get to hear his answer. I'd love to hear your perspective because you're, again, you're supposed to be polar opposites, a Bible Belt and non-Bible Belt. Everything's supposed to look totally different. What is it looking like at Central?
Yeah, well, I would imagine there's a lot of similarities. You know, for us, Christmas is a huge event that we are ramping up for from the week after Thanksgiving on. Mm-hmm. So we're, you know, our goal will be to hand out 100,000 personal invitations to friends and family. That's kind of where we put all the eggs in our basket. We'll provide tools and resources for people, but it's all casting vision about praying for and then sharing invitations with friends and family to come along with you, get in the car, pick them up, bring them with you to a Christmas service. And so, you know, so for us, a Christmas service looks a lot like a service any other weekend. It's just amped up. But we want people to come back the week after Christmas, again, with no church context, mm-hmm. and not walk in and go, this feels totally different than it did at Christmas. We want it to feel very similar.
Yeah, so it's very similar to what Pete said. One of the differences I think might be the assimilation afterwards. So far we've been really hitting on Christmas, leveraging it from an evangelistic standpoint. There, you guys both have this wrestle between evangelism and discipleship. Evangelism and discipleship is this pendulum always going back and forth. So post-Christmas, discipling somebody in your context, Judd, versus the assimilation process, the discipleship process for Pete. So whoever wants to take that first.
Well, I'll just jump in. This is Judd. You know, for us, the process, everything in our process is directed towards two seminars. One's called First Step, the other's called Second Step. Real creative, right? And First Step is 7 weeks long. Second Step is 3 weeks long. So altogether, it's a 10-week thing that we actually run simultaneous to our weekend services because, you know, it's so hard to get people to get back to church outside of a weekend.
Yeah.
And that's our primary kind of, I won't say that's our discipleship process fully, but that's our entrance point. That's where most of our people will get a Bible. Over half of our people don't even own a Bible. They get a Bible for the first time. That's where, you know, most of them will pray out loud for the very first time at their tables. They'll walk out of that 10-week seminar, two seminars together in a group and be connected to people for the first time. And then it's really a multi-year process after that.
Okay. And Pete?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we have some different programs, obviously, and connecting at cross points, walks them through the different steps and stuff. I would say, and this has been, I think this will be really helpful for people, regardless of their context. And it's something that your wife actually told me. And she was doing a staff talk one day, and she said, at the end of the day, every single human being wants two things. They want purpose, and they want community. And so for us, that assimilating process is trying to meet them where they are. That if they want purpose and they want community, for us, it's how can we get them serving? We believe we have a pretty short window of time. We're in a community. There's a ton of churches. You know, there's a, and I hate this term, but church shoppers. And that's not our goal. That's not who we're going after. But at the end of the day, we know that there's a lot of different options for them, not just other churches. There's other things grabbing them. So we're trying to say as quick as we can we in 6 weeks meet those two needs? Can we give them purpose, serving? Can we help them find community? For us, that's community groups. If we can meet one, preferably both of those two things in that first 6 weeks, we feel like we have a much better shot at helping them become fully devoted followers of Christ.
Mm. Now, you guys have, I know both of your ministries pretty well, and I know you both have classes where people can go and they can find out their next steps, not only spiritually, but their involvement at the church. What would you say to a leader that's out there, whether it's a ministry leader, an associate pastor, or a lead pastor, who subconsciously thinks that everyone's going to go through one funnel when it comes to discipleship? What would you guys say to that? They're going to go through a class. Is that what you're saying, that everyone enrolls in a class? Judd, you go first.
Okay. Well, for us, You're absolutely right. I mean, nobody, there's never one size fits all. People come into the church and in the life of the church from every possible facet imaginable. And that's great. I mean, we bless that. I do think for us, we want every volunteer, every ministry partner, every person that's a part of our ministry, if somebody asks them, like, what do I do next? We want everybody to say the same thing. And so we have great clarity on, you know, for us, first step is the first step. More than anything else, even baptism, anything, they'll be directed there because everything will be covered there. But we also know a lot of people are going to go around that and come into the life of the church from all kinds of directions. And that's great.
That's good. Recently, Holly came home and she said that you guys were having some meetings at Cross Point, Pete, about trying to make as many on-ramps as possible. Tell me about those discussions behind the scenes and the heart behind that.
Yeah, the on-ramp thing for us is huge because, again, people are coming from so many different places. You've got someone, again, who doesn't know a thing about God, and then you have someone who's been a Christian for 20 years, and their on-ramp's probably going to look a little different. So we're always trying to say, what are some of the, so let's take community groups. What are some of the different ways that people can get connected to a group? Like, the start of a new series is always big for us and pushing people towards, you know, a community group. We also realize, though, that in between series, people are showing up. And some people will sign up for a community group their very first week. And I've got other people who have been sitting out there for 5 years, and I can't talk them into getting into a community group.
Right.
But it's finding what are the different on-ramps that we can get people connected to purpose and community.
Jed, what is your, going back to the Bible Belt versus the non-Bible Belt, your biggest obstacle? So if you kind of look at your last 5 or 6 executive level meetings, what's the biggest obstacle you guys are facing?
I think, you know, for us and so many of us in the West, you know, I think the dynamic is the resource challenge that churches face in general. And I think we've always felt that pretty acutely as you're really trying to reach people who frankly aren't from necessarily stable backgrounds or families, nor is their lives or their financial world stable and in order. And so you're very much on mission to help them and lead them to Christ. And then the challenge is just, how do you resource that? It's a challenge everybody faces.
Yeah.
That's definitely always and still the big thing that stares us in the face.
So they get saved and their wallet gets saved 3 years later.
Yeah. So we took people through, we take them through, the Financial Peace University. And so as we're going through that material, we ask them to write down, you know, what amount of personal debt do you have outside of your home mortgage? The average amount of personal debt people have coming into the life of our church is over $60,000.
Oh.
I mean, that's a train wreck. You know?
Yeah.
You know, like, that just doesn't get worked out overnight. That's
no.
A long process. So we're in a long journey, you know, helping people. And I don't think we're that unique. We may be a little more extreme, but I think that's just everywhere what we're dealing with now.
Yeah. Is that your number one obstacle too, Pete?
Resources are always right there at the top. I think beyond that for us is in the South, it's moving people beyond this cultural idea that church is just something that you show up at on the weekends.
Okay.
Getting them plugged in a little deeper is really important, and it's where our challenge is.
Yeah. So like when Judd would say that they only attend, you know, every once in a while, yours would be they might attend, but they're apathetic.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're just sitting there. That's interesting.
Hey, what, Chris, one thing that might be interesting between the two, like
uh-huh.
Our people in Las Vegas, a lot of the people that we minister to will make emotional decisions to follow Christ or to take a step of faith or to get in a group or be baptized quickly, way probably more quickly than people in the Bible Belt would in general. But the challenge we have is they'll make that decision quickly, but then they'll kind of walk away from it just as quickly as too. Like, they don't necessarily follow through with it.
Yeah.
Whereas I always felt like in the South and in the Bible Belt, people were a little more thoughtful in their approach to it. But if they made a decision, they would follow through with it.
Mm. That's good. I would estimate, you know, that would definitely be a bigger issue in Vegas than it would be in Nashville, like you said. I'm going to kind of go a different route here because that brings up something that I think that everyone listening needs to hear. How do you guys deal with that? That whole idea of they got baptized, they got saved, they got baptized, and then they're not following through or they turn away. How do you deal with that emotionally? How do you deal with the spirit? Where is your responsibility for that start and end? Start with you, Pete.
Well, I would say it is incredibly frustrating. And it's not that you're mad at them. It's like, I don't want something, and I think this is a Andy Stanley quote for another topic, but it applies here. I don't want something from them. I want something for them.
Yeah.
And it's so heartbreaking for me when I see some of these cycles in their life, and I see that there's potential, like, that they, if they'll just hold on to this, if they'll follow through with this, if they'll dig into this, it could change their marriage, it could change their finances, it could change, they could finally find that purpose and community that they're longing for. And so it just breaks my heart when somebody walks away from that and they're so close, close to that tipping point.
Judd, how do you handle it? So he addressed the emotional side. How do you address it from a leadership side? How much do you own that professionally?
Yeah, I mean, it is incredibly frustrating and incredibly difficult. And what I'm going to say is probably not the best advice, but I've been doing it 20 years, and I've been slugging away in Vegas 13 of those years. So, you know, I have one perspective. And in some ways, I've lowered my expectations. I've just lowered my expectations of people and chosen to love them in the journey. And try to remember that when I came to faith, I came out of a pretty messed up background. It was more like, you know, a couple steps forward, three steps back, four steps forward, two steps back. It wasn't this clean parallel line from point A to point B. So why should I expect it to be that for other people? And so my job is to love them. God's job is to change them. And I want to keep holding up the truth, doing everything we can to encourage them. But the challenge is, if you lean in too hard on people that are going to kind of be on and off in their journey anyway, they won't perceive your ministry as a safe place to come back when they're ready to come back. And we don't ever want to push so hard with people in a discipleship process that we push them to a place where when they leave, they never come back.
I was just reminded as you were talking, in Acts, you know, thousands were saved, thousands were baptized. And I think it's somewhere around Acts 2 or Acts 3. It starts off with, and then they devoted themselves. That was how it starts. And then they devoted themselves. And for me, when I read that, I'm like, we're released. We've got to create opportunities. Ephesians 4:12. We got to equip the saints. We got to have some things out there for them to grasp onto, whether it be giving, volunteering, whatever. But they devote themselves. So at the end of the day, I just, for lead pastors out there, I pray that you don't carry too much of that with you. It's something you can't control. What you can control is what Judd just said. And what Peter said, you can love them and you can control that. So very good. I love it. So let's do this. Let's wrap this. Let's bring this thing to a close. I want to ask you both one question. And from a congregation standpoint and from where you're at in your city, what is your biggest fear right now that you're facing? Like, just if you want to be as vulnerable, that's appropriate for this podcast. Pete, we'll start with you. What is your biggest fear?
You know, I think I could dig into this as specific as you want me to. But I think that for a lot of leaders, there are a series of lies. You know, you go, leadership is tough, and you're going to get beat up, and we know there's an enemy who's on the attack. And primarily the way he does that is through lies. And I think that in different seasons of my ministry, there have been different lies that I've bought into. I've bought into the lie that nobody wants to work with me. I'm not a good enough leader. I think a big blanket one these days for me is just the fear of failure. I've never felt truly like equipped in any season that Crosspoint's gone through. I've always known, and this is true, I'm in over my head. But what I think sometimes the lie I buy into is that all that weight's on me, that I have to figure all this out, that I'm by myself in this. And that's such a lie. God's put incredible leaders in this with me. And first and foremost, I have Jesus with me. And the more I can focus on that, in all my good days, I am. But the reality is there's a lot of days that I'm driving home in the car and I'm like, oh my gosh, this thing's out of control. And I'm not a good enough leader for this. And I'm ill-equipped. And if you live in that place for too long, it can really wear you down.
That's so encouraging to hear. I know it is for those of you listening, because, I mean, Pete, you've got an amazing church that's thriving and growing, and it's healthy and it's vibrant. It's everything that I was attracted to when I came here to Nashville. And for you to still feel those pressures, it's really encouraging for all the listeners to know that that they're normal.
Yeah.
And Judd, what's your biggest fears that you're dealing with?
Yeah, I mean, I would say they're not unlike Pete's. I appreciated him sharing because I'm really resonating. I mean, I think for me, like you definitely a fear that I'm always combating is, okay, so God's used me to lead the ministry to this level. Can I, and that's really the wrong question, but I think that's where the fear comes in, can I lead it to the next level? And I think the answer is no. Nor could I lead it to the current level, but you know, God's grace working through me and some other great people allowed that to happen. And so I have to keep coming back to that. I mean, a lot of times people want to look at pastors in a ministry context, depending on the ministry they're in, and think that they're just sort of cruising down the road and, you know, a nice brand new Ford pickup, everything's smooth and easy, when, you know, I think the reality is we all have internal baggage and insecurities. And we're more like, I often feel like I'm cruising down the freeway in that old kind of work pickup, you know, with the carpet hanging off the back and all this stuff with baling wire holding it on. And you're sort of afraid to drive behind that truck because you're like, man, what's about to fall off that truck, you know? More my journey, I think, in life and leadership when it comes to my own insecurities and fears, and just processing all that with God is a regular challenge.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I really appreciate y'all's vulnerability and your openness. I know that it encouraged a lot of folks. And, you know, Judd, as we wrap up, what's one encouragement that you'd leave our ministry leaders and pastors and even business leaders that are tuning in? What's a word of encouragement that you have for them as we close out the podcast?
You know, just something fresh from today, from this morning. I've been devotionally reading through 2 Corinthians, and there's this great little nugget in 2 Corinthians. I'm just going to paraphrase it, where Paul's gone through this whole thing of not really he's talking about those false teachers and apostles and people that are really kind of painting him as a bad guy. And he says, you know, they're always commending themselves. And he says, you know, we don't commend ourselves because we let the Lord do the commending for us. And as I just read through that, I was just reminded, and that was just my prayer for me personally, is with all the insecurity that drives us as leaders and all these things that we feel like we have to have, at the end, the thing we need the most, business leaders, church leaders, we need, you know, that stamp from God. God commends us, and we need his favor. And so he's the one we turn to, and he's the one we trust. And no matter how bleak it may look, we have faith that ultimately his stamp of favor and approval is the thing that matters more than our critics, more than our current situation, more than anything else we're facing.
Mm, so good. Pete, one more word of encouragement for those listening?
Yeah, I would say, and I think this is so important, and it's one of the reasons I love that you do this podcast, because it is a source not only of great practical information, but of just encouragement. And I think the three of us know that there are thousands and thousands of church leaders out there that are on the brink of throwing in the towel.
Yeah.
And they're discouraged, and they feel hopeless, and they're just flat out tired. And they give and they give and they give, and they rarely feel like anything gets poured into them. And it can be extremely lonely. And so I think for a long time, I felt like I was alone in that. I was thinking the other day about when I went skydiving and how when you go skydiving for the first time, they don't let you go alone. You have to go tandem. And so there's somebody actually knows what they're doing. And so I often say I actually never jumped out of a plane. I just was attached to a guy who did jump out of a plane. And I think we have to remember in ministry that we're not in this alone. It's tandem. And it's not that we've got it, but it's that Jesus has us. And if we can remember that from moment to moment, I think it breathes life into us.
So good. Folks, you know, you heard Pete say there that this podcast is supposed to be practical handles for you, where you're hearing the most respected names in the church world talking about the inner workings of their church. But it's only one of the desires of this podcast. The other one is that you leave encouraged. And I pray that you heard just what you just heard just now from Judd and from Pete on a Monday. On the quitting Monday, on the holy hungover Monday, that you're listening to this and you're encouraged. So thank you so much for tuning in. And folks, I want you to know a little bit of the heartbeat behind Pete and Judd is that I just asked them, hey, listen, would you come on the podcast to encourage leaders? And that's all it took. And so, Pete and Judd, we're thankful for your heart. We're thankful for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Thanks, Pete.
And then I think the overall Bible Belt versus non-Bible Belt deal is even. So all those conversations in the conferences of which one's harder, they're just different devils. We're fighting different obstacles. We have different opportunities. And either way, it's ministry, and we're all in this together.
I love it. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right.
I appreciate it.
All right, love you, Judd.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, love you, man. Have a good day.
All right. Well, what a great conversation that was. Again, with Senior Pastor Pete Wilson and Senior Pastor Judd Wilhite, two amazing ministries that many of us have admired for several years. So interesting to hear them talk and kind of just break down what their struggles are, what their biggest opportunities are, their biggest obstacles. And really the reality is we just have different deals. We have different devils, the different areas. I started my ministry career in Charlotte, North Carolina, at the amazing Elevation Church. Loved my time there. Moved to Miami. Couldn't get more different. And I was down there with a great church, Potential Church, with Pastor Troy Gramling. Loved my time there, but totally different. They had the advantages and they had disadvantages. They had some things that were more difficult, some things that were easier in both contexts. Now, I've bounced back up to Nashville. And now people would say I'm in the Bible Belt, but I go to two different campuses regularly. One is in the Burbs, that's very Bible Belt, that has a totally different, like Pete said, apathetic issues that we've got to all consider, myself included. I'm a suburban person here in Nashville, and so I have to really battle apathy as it sets in. We've got to live a very comfortable life, and I've got to be very strategic about going out and touching real pain often so that I don't get too comfortable. But then I go to the Nashville campus downtown that's right next to the stadium, and there's a lot of real pain, and there's a lot of people that are very, very far from God. So there's the unchurched, there's the de-church, there's the church, there's the apathetic church. Listen, this whole idea about Bible Belt versus Bible Belt, one being more difficult than the other, is hogwash. And this whole idea of there being 98% unchurched out there is probably not true. And the whole idea that there's 100% churched areas is not true. Even in the Burbs, here in Nashville, Franklin, Tennessee, which is about as Pleasantville as you can get. It's like Mayberry. If you look around, you go downtown and look around, there are people that, of course, we can't judge their souls, but there's not a very obvious concern for moral integrity, not an obvious concern for upright living. And so we've got a work to do. Wherever you live in the country, we've got a lot of work to do. So again, those links of the latest research are at stewardshipcentral.org. Of course, you heard them talk about financial discipleship as well. And all the latest research for that is at Stewardship Central. And any links, if you're interested in Financial Peace University, which is a tremendous resource for you, you can check that out as well at stewardshipcentral.org. And you heard them mention Financial Peace University. And it's no secret, that's what we do here at Ramsey Solutions. And I am a firm believer that the number one obstacle that's holding churches back today is finances, and not necessarily the church's finances, but the congregation's finances, that they've got these great intentions for ministry, but being intentioned for ministry is nothing without being positioned for ministry. Here at Ramsey Solutions, it's our calling to help the church in this area. And so if that's one of your big struggles at your church, yeah, we want to help. We have stewardship solutions from everything from Financial Peace University to things for parenting, things for youth, things for elementary, things for senior citizens trying to leave a legacy, and everything in between. We want to provide that service for you. And if you want more information about that, how we can help your church in that specific area, please email me directly at chrisbrownonair@stewardship.com, and I will hook you up with your next steps to help you in that area. So hopefully you guys really appreciated the podcast today. Hopefully you got some great nuggets out of it to help you in your leadership, whether you're a ministry leader or whether you're an executive or senior level leader, or you just, you know, you're a coordinator or a layperson who loves the church. Hopefully this was an encouraging podcast for you. Well, we will be back with you next month at the turn of the year. I got a great podcast in store for you. So until next time, I would encourage you to not only be downloading these podcasts, but subscribe to it. So when it launches that first week in January, it comes directly to your phone and you're all hooked up.
Thank you so much for doing that. And thank you so much for tuning in today. And until next time, let's continue to lead our churches God's way and for God's glory. God bless you.